This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Is feelings, emotions. And today I've got back with me Sherry Siegel. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Armand.
Sherry is a neurologist, Dr. Sherry Siegel, who is going to be talking with us about a condition of feelings, a very interesting condition of feelings. You know, it's such a funny thing to watch people, Sherry, go from one feeling state to another feeling state. To go from one feeling state to another feeling state. And, I see a little problem here. Let me come right back to you. There, we fixed it. I'm sorry. Okay, Sherry, thanks for being with us. Here we are.
Happy to be here, Armand.
Yeah,
thanks for having me.
Great. Okay. So listen, let's go back to this. Let's talk about this for a minute. Feelings, human feelings, right? So how many times have a woman or said to her man, I wish you had more feelings than you have. I wish you'd identify your feelings. In fact, people get divorced because at one point somebody gets fed up with the other person's inability to feel, identify, and communicate their feelings. Why does that happen? That's a question. Well, one reason that happens is because it's not safe to communicate your emotions. One reason is it's not that you have any trouble identifying them, but every time you say what you feel, somebody pounds you over the head or yells at you or takes issue with you. If a man says to his wife, Tell me what you feel. And she says, well, I feel jealous of you. And then he punishes her for what she says. She's going to learn not to talk to him anymore about what she feels and vice versa. But there's another condition that we address, which is a condition called alexithymia, which I believe had its roots in medicine originally. I've been noticing this for the last 30 years. What's the definition of alexithymia?
It means not being able to express emotions in words, so that you may either not know you're having feelings because you don't know how to identify them, or you can't explain what you're feeling to another person.
Now, why would that happen? You can't explain what you're feeling. I believe alexithymia really relates to you can't feel it. See, it's not that you can't just explain it. It's that you can't feel it. Because the inability to explain it would be fine if you could feel it. But if you can't feel it. So let's talk about what a feeling is. First, let's talk about what a physical feeling is, okay? Tell me neurologically what happens when a person feels something in their pinky.
Mm-hmm. Armand, if you were to take a feather and touch your pinky lightly, the nerve cells in your finger would activate nerve cells in your arm. You'd send messages up to your spinal cord and then to your brain, and your brain would say, that feels nice.
Oh, wait a minute. Again. How does it go from the spinal cord? Does it continue through the spinal cord, or does it terminate at the spinal cord and then the spinal cord communicates with the brain? How does it work? Is it the same nerve goes from your pinky to your brain? Or the same network goes from your pinky to your brain? Or does it stop somewhere in a ganglia, you know, which is, I like the word ganglia.
That's a great word. And you're exactly right. There are different stages. It's like different roads that you take when you're on a trip, on your vacation. You drive the local roads, and then you come into the highways, and then you get off the highways. In the body, if you touch a noxious stimulus, that's something like fire or acid, something that really hurts, your spinal cord will tell your muscles to pull your hand away. But if it's another feeling,
will your spinal cord do that, or does your spinal cord send the message up to the brain and the brain tells you to do it? Is it reflex? Are reflexes all in the spinal cord? Are your reflex system in the spinal cord without using the brain?
You have reflexes in your spinal cord, yes, and then
that have nothing to do with your brain.
the reflexes can act on their own.
No kidding.
And then your brain, if it's functioning well, can also have a feedback from the brain as well.
Give me an example of feedback of things that function, reactions that function without using the brain. So like you said, fire. If you touch fire and you pull your hand away,
right?
That didn't even have to involve the brain at all?
Well, parts of it do. If you are conscious that hurts and you interpret that and you think, gee, I'll never do that again, those are all higher brain functions. But for example, if I use my reflex hammer, if I'm doing a neurological examination and I tap your knee, I whack it, suddenly your foot kicks up in the air. That's not a brain function. That actually takes place.
Had nothing to do with the brain.
Nothing to do with the brain.
So you tapping my knee with your hammer, and I wish you'd stop doing that, can create in me a reaction, a reflex, that is in my spinal cord?
Yes.
Or is it down on my knee?
It involves both of those things, the knee and then up to the spinal cord.
This is important. This is important for other reasons, which we'll get into later. Okay, so difficulty identifying feelings and distinguishing between feelings and bodily sensations of emotional arousal is one definition of alexithymia. An alexithymic person is kind of numb, would you say?
Yes, that's exactly right. In their emotions, they're numb in that way. So as a neurologist, I see people complaining of numbness maybe in their feet or numbness on a part of their body. If they've had a stroke, for example, and the sensory part of the brain is affected, they may not feel on the opposite side of the body, so their sensation is weakened. I can use a needle, tap them with a needle, and they won't pull their hand away because it doesn't hurt them. If I do it on the other side of the body, the part that's not affected, then they'll feel, oh, that's sharp. Oh, don't do that again.
So our body cannot feel at times and not feel things. Now, why is it that one person can feel and another person can't? And here's a good example of it. Let's go to the movies. All right, let's go see the romantic movie with Gregory Peck. And, you know, and we'll have that romantic movie because I want to go there because it's so beautiful. It always makes me cry. And he says, yeah, let's go see Steel Metal Hammer, you know, Helmet. Let's go see a war movie. Let's go see the invasion of Pearl Harbor because that always makes me cry. Well, on her level, she's saying I have a different level of feelings. And on his level, he's saying I have a different regard for feelings. How could it be so different? How could it be so different? And who's wrong? 90% of the people who ever come to consult with me about as a couple always come in pointing the finger and say, tell him or tell her she's wrong. They're wrong. Okay, alexithymia. What does it take to not feel? First of all, what does it take to feel? People think feelings are all in the mind, you know, are purely emotional. What do you think?
I think you feel with your brain and you feel with your nervous system. Sometimes people think of nervous system as something that makes you anxious or nervous. But the truth is your nerves help you feel sensation in your hands, in your feet, in your body. They help you interpret how you walk. Because if you didn't, some people, for example, who have chronic syphilis can't really feel the ground that they're walking on. So they often have what's called a high stepping gait because their sensation is not normal. And then there are some people who have other disorders and their spinal cord tracts are not working right, so that they also have an abnormal ability to feel things and to move as a result of that, because we need to feel to know where we are in space.
So people could lose their ability to sense. Now, let's say we wanted to talk about a feeling like sadness. Very often people think of a feeling of sadness as being a psychological feeling with no physical counterparts. Are there physical counterparts to sadness?
Well, every emotion that you have is understood or activated by the neurons. And so your nerve cells in your brain are active with electricity and with chemicals. And so, yes, to feel an emotion, you have to have both of those things working.
Every feeling we have has with it a sensorium, a reaction, a part of us that is both chemical and electrical. It is not that your emotions are all electrical, but when you feel anger, you're filled with an alternate chemistry, and one that you don't normally walk around with if you suddenly feel rage, right? What would the chemical changes be in someone who feels rage?
In rage, some of the chemicals that the body emits are similar to the fight or flight chemicals. And so people feel very agitated. They want to move. They want to run. They pace the room. And so they're activated.
And what chemicals would be thrown in abundance?
Norepinephrine, epinephrine, those are the things that are floating around the system, have a flooding the system.
I know you're thinking that the audience all knows because you're just tossing it off. Be real specific. Norepinephrine, epinephrine, what about dopamine? What about those things? Are those all involved?
They're involved as well.
Because there are chemical changes that take place with anger. There are chemical changes that take place with sadness. Just for example, anybody who's listening right now, if they were to allow themselves to feel sadness, there's a way to do it. A way to feel sad is just put your bottom lip over your top lip. You know, suddenly, if you put your bottom lip over your top lip and you relax, you suddenly feel like you're a baby. You know,
you're pouting.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're right.
It goes so quick. You can go backwards so quick. And then, so what happened? There was a trained response there. That bottom lip over the top lip was associated with other responses that you've had in your life and chemical changes, and your body drops down. You suddenly no longer become an adult. You suddenly feel like an infant. So you have the feelings of an infant, the kind of a sadness of an infant, just by doing a simple physical change. So therefore, emotions could be in some way manipulated by chemistry, as they are, which is why people like drugs. Why do you think people like marijuana? Alcohol. Every pill that people take, mood-altering pill, is meant to do just that, alter my chemistry, which will alter my mood. That's the reason they do it. So we have ways of altering our moods just through chemistry, and of course everybody knows how it's done with antidepressants and so on and so forth. But the people who feel themselves completely separated from the world and alexithymic, and they feel themselves unable to feel, how do they reclaim their feelings? What do you think, Sherry?
I think it takes a lot of willingness to do it, and then training with someone who can help them, someone where they feel they can trust someone and learn about the feelings.
One of the biggest difficulties I ever see, men and women, this battle that takes place forever as couples, where the woman says, he just has no feelings, he has no feelings, he has no feelings, I wish you would tell me what he feels. So finally, the man who felt nothing starts telling his woman or his wife or his what he feels, and he starts admitting to the fact, now that he's identifying, you know, I feel vulnerable, I feel scared, I feel... And suddenly she looks at him, and she didn't want a man who did this. She didn't want this. Holy cow, what's he doing? Now suddenly she looks at him and he loses all of his sexual appeal because he has become somebody who is vulnerable and it's not what she wanted in the first place. So I have seen people who have asked their husbands, asked their men to go into therapy and learn what you feel so you could communicate your feelings to me. And then the man does it and now she has no interest in him at all. Well, that's enough of that. Let me go find a real man, one who doesn't feel. And then I'll try to break him down and try to get him to feel. And men do this with women, too. Try to tell me what you really are. Tell me what you really need. Tell me what you really feel. Then the woman stands up and says, okay, I've identified it. Here it is. And he looks at it and he says, well, this is not what I wanted. I wanted somebody who I would take care of. I didn't want somebody who was strong. So watch out for what you hope for, my friends. Alexithymia. Alexithymia is a kind of a numb condition. There are cultures, you know, that walk around that way. There are cultures, there are people who I have seen in cultures that have been so oppressed that they're alexithymic all the time. They're numb. They don't feel anything. How else would you get through war? What an adaptation. An adaptation of the abused. I have worked with many young people who were abused sexually as kids or abused physically by being beaten. And many of them become alexithymic. Why not? Because they can't afford to feel it anymore. If they felt it, the pain would be too big. They would probably lose their mind. So what they did instead, Sherry, was they shut off their feelings. And how do you do it? How do you do it? You could command your brain to not let you feel the sensations that would lead to your having these emotional outbursts and feelings.
I wish we could find out how the brain shuts that down.
It does do it through some kind of magic at the moment, but it does work. Brain is an amazing thing.
And they are studying the brain of people with brains of people with alexithymia, looking using fMRI, which is a functional MRI scan.
What are they finding?
Word's not out yet, but what they're doing is testing people on alexithymic scales, finding people who are in the high levels of alexithymia and comparing them to people with low levels of alexithymia. And then they're seeing if the brain functions differently.
Kind of interesting is whether or not a person who has high level of feeling can become a person who has low level of feeling. I would imagine as we go through physical changes, and I imagine even in menopause, a person who could be very, very sensitive can become very insensitive. Well, do you think, Sherry, that with changes like, you know, if a woman goes through menopausal change, she loses her sensitivity, as opposed to, you know, if she was very sensitive her whole life, maybe she eventually becomes less sensitive?
Hormones definitely act on the brain. It's hard to know, or if we can make a generalization about what happens to every woman. But certainly hormones have a function on the brain. In fact, people with migraines, sometimes after menopause, they begin to have fewer migraines. Their sleep cycle changes. Their sensitivity to cold changes. So there are physical things that happen as a result of the hormones.
Well, what do you think that most hormones make you more sensitive, feel more or feel less?
I
don't think a hormone can make you feel less. I wonder how it would work. What hormone is a numbing hormone? None that I know of. So I think serotonin and I think all the other things, dopamine and so on and so forth, all the neurotransmitters and hormones, I think they heighten your sensation, which kind of accounts for why when somebody is premenstrual, they will feel more sensitive, possibly.
Yes, so there's a definite swing in the hormonal balance. Estrogen and progesterone change a lot during the menstrual cycle. And so that you're right that the change in the hormones and sometimes the treatment for people with perimenstrual syndromes, that is the mood swings and the discomfort that they feel around the time of their period, it's treated with more hormones.
More hormones. So the idea, and of course, when people go through menopause, one of the treatments is give them more hormones.
Right, to balance it out, to make it more like they were before they had their
before, and as opposed to
menopause.
Going through it. Emotions, you know, and so therefore it says the following with the men, as men get older too. I've watched men who get older feel less reactive, less spontaneous, and I think it may be a drop in the testosterone that makes that happen. You know, as you get older, you lose some of your testosterone. That kind of goes with you, and now this drive is gone. And with this drive being gone, there could be a whole sensorium, a whole bunch of feelings that are less. Because if you're not in the testosteronic hunt of a man looking to find a mate, right, which is the mandate, the biological imperative, you know, you've got to go find somebody. If you're not in that hunt and you're not doing that, then maybe the body just says to you, okay, you don't have to be so sensitive. Now you could relax. So now you don't have to be so reactive to everything. Now, as you get to be a little older, what happens to you is you get, it's kind of nice. Suddenly you're sitting on a bench and somebody yells over, look, a fire, and you go, yeah, it's a fire. Let's get some marshmallows. Where, suppose in the past, you'd be jumping up and running around and rushing all over the place. So I think age has a great deal to do with it, you know?
I agree. You're right that lots of things change with age. Your body changes and your brain changes.
So then we have, as part of age, is allowing yourself to become alexithymic. What do you think? Because the people I know who are older, they feel less. The people I know who sit by the sides of the pools down in Florida, they have fewer feelings. They're kind of numb. If you ever go to a home where people are kind of placed when they get old, you know, the people are kind of numb the whole way. So is alexithymia one of those conditions where you're getting prepared to kind of, you know, leave the planet?
I think of it as something that sometimes comes along with some other medical problems, like trauma to the brain, sometimes the autistic spectrum disorders, such as Asperger's syndrome. Sometimes there's an association between a lack of understanding or ability to express emotions when you have Asperger's or autism, or sometimes even from brain trauma.
But you know, Sherry, if you think about it, what we're basically saying is that as people, that emotions have a use, have a purpose, but they seem to have a greater purpose early on, when hormones and chemicals are more active than they have later on. Later on, the wisdom, you know, they always say follow our elders. Why? Because our elders are less reactive. And following your elder is following somebody who is less reactive, therefore less emotional. Emotional in a loving kind of way, but not reactive. They don't have as much fear. They don't have as much pain. They don't have as much complaint. They may have bodies that are somewhat broken, but they're wiser because they're not as reactive.
When you're a baby or a child, all those experiences are new to you. And so you're right. You react to them.
It's raw, absolutely.
In a very significant manner. And I think as you mature, you are more familiar with these. I know that feeling. Oh, that's just some fear. That's just some anger. Sometimes you know it's just a feeling and that it will actually move on if you can cop to it.
Well, maybe what happens over time is the reason you're allowed to identify it is because you got old enough and separated enough away from it that you're not so sensitive anymore. You know, in other words, when you're so sensitive, you can't do anything but feel it. Now, I know people who are very sensitive people who feel too much. They feel so much that they don't feel anything. And the way I would describe it, Sherry, and maybe you could as well, sometimes I think the nerves are firing at such a level and the chemistry is firing at such a level that you're overwhelmed by all of the feelings that happen to you. Like they talk about alexithymia and panic attacks. Why do people who have panic attacks have a high presence of alexithymia? What do you think?
I think it's, again, because those body hormones, the endocrine hormones, the norepinephrine and epinephrine, are flooding the system. And in some ways, they just want the body to fight back or to get the heck out of there so that they're not in the state where they can calmly think about things or understand what's happening in their minds. It's fight or flight.
So integrating a feeling and letting a feeling take place and letting a feeling go inside and being able to identify feelings is very difficult when you're either flooded with feelings or you're shut off from feelings. Now, you said something a little earlier that I thought was important, Sherry. You said the mind, the sensations take place in a lot of different parts. They could take place in your fingers. They could take place, you know, you could go to your spinal cord, then up to your brain. When a child has damage to their head, isn't there a good chance that eventually that child's damage will manifest in an inability to feel sensation?
For some children, depending on the amount of damage, they can have that as a consequence. Many children, what's wonderful about the child brain is that it has a great ability to heal, and that other parts of the brain can actually take over for the broken parts. So in a lot of ways, if you have an injury as a child, and then you have good rehabilitation, or you have a loving family that helps you recover from it, then you have a good chance of living a perfectly normal life.
But what if you grow up in a family where you're getting slapped in the face at every minute, and your head's being battened against the wall, and you have a violent father, and you have this violence all over your family and all over your neighborhood, and your head gets banged right and left?
Yeah, chances are good if you're having physical violence, you're probably having emotional violence as well. So you have a very bad environment for healing.
Well, then the only answer would be your body has to find a solution. If you are being tortured, your body has to find a way, has to find a solution. It has to find a way to deal with this pain. And one of the ways that it deals with the pain is it says, don't feel this stuff. So the body shuts off the sensation levels. In other words, the mind itself, the brain says, we're going to kill that nerve right there at that nerve ending. We're not going to have anything at that nerve ending. So you won't feel anything there. So in effect, people who are abused very often report that they have very little sensation, that they are numb. But that numbing is not just a psychological numbing because of the damage. What we're saying is that that psychological numbing, that inability to feel, is a combination both of the psychological problem, remembering the terror and trying to block the terror, but its physiological component as well. Which is why so often people who are abused physically, either sexually or abused by beating, find it so difficult to find relationships with anyone else. Because their feelings are just not available. They're closed off. They want to be shut off. It's such a big issue, this whole issue. You know, and I love the fact that you and I can study it from both a physiological and psychological point of view, which I am believing both are the same. I don't think there's a pure psychological anything. I don't think there's a single emotion that is all stands by itself and doesn't have a physiological component. Why would there be? It's like, well, we just can't understand it. Now we can understand almost all of the chemistry. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we want to take your calls about this today, about your level of feelings and what you feel. At our telephone number, 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. We're going to take a short break. I'm sorry.
We'll come back in a minute.
Boy, will we ever. We'll be back with you. This is Armand DeMille, WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York City. And it is just about 1:30. How about your feelings? Are your feelings shut off? How about a little music for you around your feelings? Oh, how do you like that?
What would I do if I could suddenly and know once again what I feel is real? I could cry, I could smile, I might lay back for a while. Oh, tell me, what what would I do if I could reach inside of me and know how it feels to see I like what I see, then I'd be more than glad to share all that I have inside of here and the song that my heart might ring.
From the Wiz. You know, it gets to be a point later in life where you're glad, you're so glad you don't have the feelings. I was just told that there's a new program in some of the city schools where they're having kids talk about, being able to talk about and identify their feelings and being able to talk about them to each other and helping them, becoming part of the curriculum.
I think that's brilliant.
Isn't
something
it?
We
it's
need.
About time.
Emotional education.
Yeah,
it's
emotional,
great.
Some kind of intelligence around that as well. If you're not aware of what you feel, it's kind of a dull world to live in. But, you know, it's not a very uncomfortable dull world because you don't feel much pain as well as you don't feel much pleasure. And the pleasure you feel is kind of limited. You know, I think I hate to say it, but taking a lot of medicines for psychiatric illnesses do that to you. They cut off the highs and they cut off the lows, and you say, well, you know, I've been so miserable, I've been so depressed. They give me a pill to make me undepressed, and you take the pill and it makes you a little undepressed, but it also takes off the top edge of it, you know. You don't get as hysterical as well, but you don't get as excited as well. Many people would rather have that limited excitability, excitement, if they could get rid of that heavy depression. So many people I know are very happy not to feel things. What they don't know is that there is, it's a big part of life they're missing out on. But of course they don't want to go there because it's too painful. It's too difficult.
It's almost like something that oscillates, goes up very high or goes down very low. You just bring the range closer to each other, like the highs and the lows closer
to each other.
And so although the highs sometimes for patients or for people feel good, but the lows are so painful when it hurts that much to go so low. If you bring down the high, then the low won't be so low.
Well, there's a real problem. You know, that's why people take a lot of pain medication, and you're a pain medication specialist. Imagine if somebody had a damaged arm, a damaged hand. And the hand was so damaged and so painful, and the bones were all crushed. And they eventually got it fixed enough. But whenever any weather, as you know it, when you get bones, you know, and your bones are there, and your bones are aching, and the weather gets bad, it's really painful. So you take an anti-pain medication. You take something to take away the pain. And someone says to you, you know, you should let yourself feel it. You should not take that pain medication. It's like you ask yourself, why do I want to feel this pain? Why do I want to feel it? Because very often the efforts to block pain in themselves block many other feelings in your life.
It's a great point. And I think some patients also find the pain so distracting that they can't do their work or be there for their families, so that sometimes the medications can tone down the intensity of the pain, at least somewhat. Often they don't take it all the way away.
Let's talk about you. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
I'm fine.
You know, it's funny. I've experienced that clearly two times in my life. What do you call it? I missed the first couple of minutes of the program.
Alexithymia.
Mm-hmm. My first love actually was suicidal. And I remember clearly at one point that during one of her episodes, I was going to go crazy. I felt like I was going to go crazy. And I remember literally like a switch saying, I can't let this happen. And literally I felt like I was hovering. And I, you know, not in a mystical way, I felt like it wasn't happening to me anymore. And I was watching her, and I could be there for her without it hurting me.
That's an amazing use of one of the great psychiatric defenses called depersonalization. That's really wonderful how you stepped out of yourself.
But I literally remember almost looking down at myself when she was on the floor.
Absolutely.
And I
it's
was
exactly
kneeling
the way
over
it feels.
Her. But I huh?
Good, Sherry.
It was such a wonderful description. I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
Tony,
you just described depersonalization in the perfect manner,
right.
But it seems that you were able, that helped you.
Yeah, it did, absolutely.
And it shows us about it as about all of these methods as a survival method, including being able to shut off your feelings.
The thing it happened again to me like about 15 years later. I was going through a divorce, and I was in family court, and I remember I thought I was going to lose my daughter. And the same exact thing, it was like instantaneous. I went from, okay, I can't go crazy, I have to fight this, and I need to be relaxed, and I stepped out of myself, and I saw myself again turn numb. You know? Those are the two clear instances in my life that I've done it. But my question to you guys today is, because I've had that sort of like an innate thing that I've done, I've actually become, like you said, the women in my life have always complained about me being like a steak with eyes. You know, that's the way one of them described me, a piece of steak with eyes. And I always thought it was a strength, and I'm actually questioning it right now, and that's the reason I'm calling.
That's a great question, Tony, because... Of course, according to my family, it is a strength. You know, where I grew up, not being able to have emotions and not being able to feel emotions and not being able to have emotions cripple you. That's the real question. The question is not whether the emotions are there or not. It's whether they get in the way of your work, your ability to have relationships, you know, if they get in the way of your functioning. So there's plenty of feelings you could have as long as they don't get in your way.
Right.
People who let the emotions get in their way are considered, that's what's considered not powerful.
Right, right.
You know?
I agree with that. But also, along with that, you know, there are things that are very difficult in life that take time. You know, the end of a relationship, something, you know, very traumatic in life. It takes time to go through it, you know, and I find that I literally can separate myself almost from anything. I think I would be great in an emergency because, you know, I would literally, you remember those cartoons where you get hit on the hand and the cartoon just looks at it and walks to another room and yells?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes,
I'm like
absolutely.
That.
So what you're saying, Tony, and this is for your own information, what you're saying is that rage gets in your way, powerlessness. I'll take two things. I'll say when Tony feels rage combined with he feels powerless, he dissociates, he disconnects, he depersonalizes. Now that's, get this combination, Tony. Rage, you feel angry,
okay.
And you feel helpless.
All right.
You can't do anything about it. Your girlfriend's committing suicide. You're mad. You're angry at her. You know, you feel rage on one level. On another level, you know you can't express it, so you feel powerless. So you leave your body. And you function as if you're just taking care of her. Right. And that's what you're able to do. But I would say, I would look for my triggers. So the real question is, how are you in with your feeling of anger? How do you feel about it? How do you feel about getting angry? How do you feel about getting angry?
I'm so good at controlling it that it really doesn't...
Controlling it, right.
Yeah, I'm really, really one of those really calm people. Very few things get me upset. But then, you know, I do have, like you said, if I internalize it, it'll explode at the wrong times. Not greatly, but I think more, you know, I'm trying to listen more than talk, but I just want to tell you that I see it in my life more as a positive tool, you know, than it is a negative, because it does help me to handle most things and stresses in life, and I'm very happy generally.
It sounds, Tony, like you made a decision. You can react to some of the feelings that you're feeling, and then at other times when it's important for your family or for yourself, you can step out of those feelings and not react to them, and that helps you function better. So in relationships where you feel safe, you can choose to talk about or associate with your feelings, and like Armand was saying, other times you dissociate with your feelings when it's not safe.
Right, absolutely, yes.
Thanks a lot for calling in, Tony. Thank
you
so much. 212-209-2900. I'm here with Sherry Siegel, neurologist. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. I actually moved my schedule around today, scheduled my day around your show, and I'm so glad that
I'm worth it.
Oh, definitely. But I'm really, this is the very situation that I've been in for a number of months.
What's your name?
Diane. I've spoken to you before, and I actually have an appointment that I can have with you, and I've been putting it off because I've been in this kind of a hiatus from... You actually told me to take a vacation from helping people.
Yeah, that's what you've been doing. I remember you, Diane, sure.
And when I was in college, I was in a relationship that became abusive, and within 2 weeks, I felt like I kind of cured myself of caring about the person by forcing myself not to think about them. And that was a conscious decision to turn off my feelings. And it was kind of frightening to discover that I had the power to do that. And right now I'm in this situation where I was terribly, terribly hurt, and I gave this person a number of chances, and they kept hurting me in the same way, emotionally, betrayed me. And I got to a point where I kind of turned off my emotions, and I really don't wish to stay that way.
Well, there it is again, though. Let's look at it again, Diane. Rage and powerlessness.
Exactly.
You get the two. You get the combination, rage and powerlessness, and you make a choice, you see? And your choice is, I think I'll go numb till I get over this. Until we learn for you to deal with your anger better and your powerlessness better, your option is going to be just shut the doors, shut the windows, close the house down till I feel better. It works. It's a good strategy. Yours is a good strategy.
I wish I could learn some other strategies, because I feel like when people put you in a position where you are powerless and your only choice is to walk away from something that you're invested in, or put up with something that enrages you, you know, what choice do you have? You have to eventually turn your emotions off and walk away, even if you're invested.
Sure. Okay. You could do that temporarily.
That can be a temporary
strategy. It doesn't have to be a permanent strategy.
Exactly. I'm trying to consciously not care too much about people until I feel more that I can trust them. But that's a very foreign kind of thing for me in my personality.
I always am
very trusting, and I want to feel safe with people, and I like... I guess you could say I really like those highs, and I usually say, well, it, you know, if you get hurt, that you have to take the chance that you're going to get hurt, or you're not going to have those really great experiences too. But
no, I kind of agree with you. Stop taking chances that you'll be hurt. The hell with it. You've had enough, Diane. You know, that's it. No more punishment for you. That's it. Find the places where you're not going to get hurt, and let's deal with those, and forget about all those wonderful things where you could get hurt.
And it sounds like your brain is protecting you, Diane. It's telling you, don't, you got to take care of Diane. If someone's betraying you and someone's not being kind to you, it sounds like your brain is saying, I've got to shut down, I've got to protect myself.
But I find that, I don't know if I'll be able to connect with another person when I am ready if I'm still holding my emotions back.
Is that why you won't keep your appointment to see me? Because you're afraid you won't be able to connect with me? Oh, my gosh.
No,
Diane, you made a donation to WBAI, and that gives you a chance to see me for an opportunity. And we have just a few openings now before we get into the next fund drive. Make that call.
I do want to do it, but I wanted to do it when I felt I could look back with some clarity, and I didn't want to kind of be in a fog.
I understand, but I'm very good at swimming in muddy water. Nice to talk to you, Diane.
Thank you very much. I wanted to say also that I'm a musician, too, and I'm putting my energy into my music, and that's sort of sometimes a situation where you feel like you could get hurt because you're very front and center, but everything's been very positive there.
That's the nature of the arts. The nature of the arts is you get hurt because somebody's not going to like what you do, but that's the nature of being an artist.
But it's feeling really good because I'm putting my emotional energy and my physical energy there instead of things that have proven to not be great for me. So
good for you. Feedback. Thanks for calling
sure.
in, Diane.
Thank you.
212-209-2900. Yes. Hi there. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Oh, yeah. Let me lower the radio a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah. Hello?
Yes. And what's your name?
Okay. My name is Ronald Toro.
Hello, Ronald.
Hello. Hello. How are you?
Good.
And basically what I wanted to mention was, I'm a little nervous.
Oh, well,
I have
take
a little
your time, Ronald.
Question.
Take your time.
I have a stent and this and that. Okay, my point is that I think the nature of power, at least for me, is oxygen in the blood. Now, I've had a stent, so that means I've been deprived probably of wholehearted flow of oxygen for probably the last 40, because I'm about 70.
Uh-huh.
So what I'm saying is I actually can see the depth of my mind change in an instant, as soon as my medication kicks in, and certain supplements that I take, for instance, super cranberry, pomegranate is another one, L-arginine, that it either opens up my blood vessel, whatever it does, as soon as that sense of lightness takes over, and it's immediate, every thought is gone.
That's really a beautiful thought.
I'm thinking
thought.
About my son, about this. I mean, it's amazing. Well, you know, in other words, I think there is a oneness between the body and the brain. I mean, I'm talking about a strict one. It's just one thing.
Well, that's kind of
one
beautiful.
Physical.
You know, listen to that, Sherry. He's saying to us that he could sense, and his focus is the oxygenation of the blood, which he does actively through the many things he focuses on, and he can feel the difference in his spirit just by taking that, by paying attention to the chemical consciousness that he has. And this is at age 70, so there's no going numb for Ronald.
That's right. The oxygen gets into the blood goes to the brain, and the brain can feel different.
It's really great.
Once you feel empowered, and empowerment, I mean, okay, it becomes more and more and more different things as our life continues, you know, humanity. But the whole body seems to be geared toward one thing, the holding on, keeping, and of oxygen. Now, I only got 89 of IQ, so what I'm saying doesn't have no, but that is so far my experience.
Ronald, I want to thank you very much for calling in. That's very intelligent. Thank you so much.
Okay, I really want to thank you, and I'm sorry if I sound a little excited.
You sound great.
Okay, well, so do you. I've been listening to you for, like, since forever. That's where actually
forever.
I get a thought or two and I put it together from things that you all say that, you know, I give a lot of credence to. All right,
well, thank you. Thank you, and thank you for bringing us your wisdom. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, let's take one more call. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hello?
Hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Turn your radio down. Good.
Yeah, I just turned it down. I was really glad to be talking to you. I'm a big fan. I listen to you every day.
What's your name?
My name is Sarah.
Sarah, did you just make that name up?
Yeah.
How good of you. I like that name. Well, it's one of my favorite names, Sarah. I have a good friend named Sarah.
Oh, but, great. Well, I've been listening to today what your topic is about, and I mean the disorder. Well, not disorder, but the name of it that you said. You're there with the neurologist.
Alexithymia. Yes.
Yeah, that. I mean, I know it's. Then you guys started touching on a whole bunch of other things, and I just wanted to share with you and tell you sometimes. I know that I realize that the brain is like so powerful. It's very, very, very powerful. And only recently have I mean, I've been watching things and I've been reading books, like touching on quantum physics and everything. And it says that, you know, your reality is what you make of it. And, you know, in other words, that your mind is very powerful, and what you set your mind to, you will make happen. You'll find a way to do things in order to get things accomplished. Now, I don't understand, why don't we have more focus on that, on our abilities to accomplish things and to do things with the powerful minds that we have? Because I know in school, you know, everything is just, you know, yes, you learn, but no one ever takes the time to sit and explain to you and
tell
you.
Let me ask you something, Sarah, before you go further, okay, because we only have a couple of minutes.
Oh, yeah.
You overcame a major tragedy in your life. You were abused as a child.
Well, I wasn't abused, but I've had my closest people, well, my best friend, and, you know, have them have things to them, and they've been the ones to come to me and share with me all these, like, intimate details about everything. And, I mean, my heart actually hurt for her, you know what I mean?
I hear you. Sure.
My
See,
best
you're,
friend,
you're an
so.
Empath. You're somebody who feels.
Yes,
what they feel. Uh-huh.
But then it gets me. I mean, my feeling, my caring for other people has led me to, you know, like, really, really destructive relationships. But, I mean, and that's the thing. I can focus my mind to do things, like, in my studies. Like, there are things that happen that are really weird to me. Like, if I want something, I'll picture it. I'll picture the situation. And then when I get to that point, like, it'll probably be, like, months down the line. And then I feel like it's deja vu or something. Like, I thought about this. Like, I wanted this to be like this. And it might not be, you know, exact to the T, but it's more or less, like, similar. And it freaks me out sometimes because I'm like, okay, so I can do it with things like this. Like, I love animals. And I want to help animals all the time. And it was about like a week ago, there was a cat in the middle of the street and it was hit, but it was still alive. I got out my car, I picked up the cat from the middle of the road, and I just put it to the side. I had hand sanitizer in my car. And it was just like, you know, something that led like to my want. Like, you know, I was really sad for the cat, but I, you know, I was glad that I just moved it out the road so it wouldn't get hurt even more. You know what I mean? So I moved it to the side, and it was like, it was really bad. So I knew nature was going to take its course and the cat was going to leave. But, you know, whatever. It's just, so things like that happen. And I wonder, why is it that I can't apply that into romantic relationships when I see that I get hurt over and over and over again? And
yeah,
yet,
it sounds like you're carrying a big burden, and I wish we had more time to talk about it.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, Sarah, send me an email.
Thank you so much for listening. What's your email?
Armand@thepositivemind.com.
Armand@thepositivemind.com?
Yes, Armand @thepositivemind.com.
Armand. My name is Aisha, actually.
Aisha,
yes.
Beautiful name. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Armand@thepositivemind.com, right?
That's it.
Thank you so much.
We have to be leaving, my friends. Thank you very much, Sherry Siegel, for being with us again.
Glad to be here, Armand.
Yeah, and thanks for your help. We will be back with you, my friends, on tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more of this wonderful stuff.
Ah, it's that time again.
What time is it?
Time for the CCCP.
Aha, the monthly laughing nightmare.
Wednesday, July 22nd at 2 p.m.
Cutthroat political satire with John McDonough, Janet Coleman, David Dozer, Moogie Klingman, Otis McClay, Scooter, Paul Fisher, Mike Squire, Ken Waldman, Steduzo Mbili, The Capital Steps, and Randy Critico.
That's Wednesday, July 22nd at 2 p.m.
The CCCP.
The monthly laughing nightmare.
Hi, this is Isolina de la Cruz with a message from the Bolivarian Solidarity Circle. We want to invite you to the Fiesta Bolivariana, an evening of solidarity with the Bolivarian Revolution, in support of the Food Sovereignty and Social Change Delegation departing to Venezuela this July. The Great Fiesta is this Thursday, July 23rd at 7 p.m. at Local 1199, 310 West 43rd Street between 8th and 9th Avenue. Come and learn more about the current situation in Venezuela with the participation of Council Member Charles Barron and the Venezuelan Consulate Carol Delgado. Also, live music from the Haitian group Tokai, Bomba en Plena from the amazing group Bomba Joe, featuring the comedy of the talented Chris Diaz, and music by the coolest DJ in town, DJ Melo G. Come and have a great time while supporting a good cause. For more info, call 347-251-6301. That's 347-251-6301.
We are Refining Faith, and we listen to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.
Hello, you're invited to tune into the WBAI Summer Fundraising Drive, starting Monday, August 3rd, going through Saturday, August 15th. There are three ways you can help WBAI in its financial recovery. First, tune in, enjoy the programs, and make a donation based on those programs. Second, come to the station at 120 Wall Street and volunteer to answer the pledge line. And third, go to WBAI.org and make a donation now, giving us a head start in making our goal of $450,000. This may sound like a lot, but if we each do our part, we can accomplish this goal and much, much more. Please support WBAI and help us make this station, your station, strong and healthy. Call 212-209-2826 and register to answer the phones. That's 212-209-2826. Tune in and support our summer fundraising drive, August 3rd through 15th. And thank you so much for all you've done to support WBAI Radio. 99.5 FM, WBAI.org.
Celebrate 50 years of revolutionary Cuba. Join Casa de las Americas and the July 26th Coalition as we celebrate the 56th anniversary of the attack on the Moncada Garrison, the action that launched the Cuban Revolution. Featured speakers include Leonard Wineglass of the Cuban Five Legal Team and Abelardo Moreno, the new Cuban ambassador to the United Nations. Join us on Saturday, July 25th at 6:30 p.m. at the Martin Luther King Jr. Labor Center, located at 310 West 43rd Street between 8th and 9th Avenues. For more information, call 718-601-4751. That's 718-601-4751. Long live the Cuban Revolution.
This is WBAI New York, streaming live at WBAI.org. Stay tuned for the Christmas Coup Comedy Players. That's the CCCP and the monthly Laughing Nightmare.
What seems to be the trouble, soldier? You look a little bit worried.
Well, I am, Chaplain. Just a little bit.
Actually, there's no need to be worried, as the Army has taken all of the necessary precautions to see that we're perfectly safe here.
Sir, have you ever been out at one of these shops before?
Yes, I've had the opportunity to see a number of the atomic tests. I feel that as a chaplain, it is my responsibility to be with my men.
What's it like, Chaplain?
First of all, one sees a very, very bright light, followed by a shock wave, and then you hear the sound of the blast, and then it seems as though there's a minor earthquake. And then you look up and you see the fireball as it ascends up into the heaven. It's a wonderful sight to behold.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.